Hello and welcome to our UFC 321 post-fight show. I'm Ariel Helwani. It is Saturday, October 25th at approximately 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And my friends, UFC 321 has just wrapped up in the most disappointing, heartbreaking, painful, unceremonious way possible. 4 minutes and 35 seconds into the first round, in what was turning out to be a tremendous main event, a back-and-forth showcase for both men. Both Tom Aspinall and his official first UFC heavyweight title defense, Ciryl Gane, in what could have been his last crack at a UFC title. Much talked about that he was 0-2 going into this fight, as far as title fights were concerned, including an interim title fight. Looking good. Hitting Tom with some shots that he didn't see coming. Busting Tom open a little bit. Bloody nose and all. But then with 4 minutes and 35 seconds remaining in the first round, he very clearly, Ciryl Gane did, very clearly poked Tom Aspinall in the eye, in both eyes. Somehow, outstretched hand, fingers went into both eyes. And it was the right eye that really proved to be the worst of the two. And Tom Aspinall, after almost taking the full 5 minutes, saying repeatedly he could not see, referee Jason Herzog consulting with the referee and declaring that the fight would end in a no contest due to an unintentional foul. Had he deemed it intentional, it would have been a DQ loss for Ciryl Gane. Because it's an unintentional foul, and we suspect he wasn't trying to poke Tom Aspinall in both eyes as he was looking so good in that first round, they deem it a no contest. As a result, Tom Aspinall is still the reigning defending UFC heavyweight champion. He was interviewed after the fight, very, very upset, was swearing, telling the crowd who was booing him, "Why are you booing me? I can't see. This is bullshit." He did not want to be there. He did not want to stay even for the, you know, for the Bruce Buffer decision to be read. He wanted to leave. He had a wet compress of sorts on his right eye. He was extremely upset. He kept saying it was bullshit. They interviewed Ciryl Gane as well. Gane was upset, saying he was sorry, and that was it. It was just a bad scene. Both guys were actually getting booed. There were a lot of Tom Aspinall fans there. We heard them chanting throughout the night. There were a lot of Ciryl Gane fans. We heard them chanting, especially throughout the main event. They were very loud, very boisterous. It was a good scene. But as I'm talking to you all right now, they are replaying the eye pokes. And, I mean, they went in there. Like, there is one shot where you cannot see either fingernail. The two fingernails are all the way into both of Tom Aspinall's eyes. And of course, I saw it on the chat. I saw it online. The moment he faces adversity, the people are saying, he quote unquote quit. That's what the people are saying. Complete hogwash, complete nonsense. If you just watch it, you will see that those were two nasty, deep eye pokes. I do not think that they were intentional, but I do not, like, how could we sit here and fault Tom Aspinall for not continuing? Too much at stake, too much, you know, hanging in the balance. And that's nasty stuff. You can't go out there fighting a guy like Ciryl Gane on, you know, a half an eye, one eye. Too much at stake. We're going to talk about all of that, of course. Plus, we will celebrate the fact that Mackenzie Dern is now the UFC strawweight champion. A hard-fought battle against Virna Jandiroba. She beats her for the second time. This time, as she said in the post-fight interview, this time she was a little surprised at how tough Virna was. Of course, the belt was vacant because of the fact that Zhang Weili is moving up. You kind of wonder why they have to keep doing this, why Zhang can't still be the champion. But alas, Mackenzie is the champion now. And it was a great scene with her father, Megaton Wellington Diaz, crying afterwards. Great scene with her daughter in the cage as well. A beautiful scene, if we're being 100% honest. Congrats to Mackenzie, who I think a lot of people didn't believe that she would even make it this far, 15 or so fights in the UFC, let alone become a UFC champion. A whole host of other results to talk about as well. But let me say hello to the other members of 3PAC. First, we've got the man in the hat, a.k.a. the mayor of the Nutmeg State, Mr. Chuck Minnenall, here with us. Hello, Chuck. How are you?
It's good to see you guys again. It's been a minute. What unfortunate circumstances to regather under, huh?
Yes, and I'm really looking forward to your thoughts. Let me also say hello to the patron saint of the Emerald Isle, the host of the critically acclaimed podcast, The Crack, the one and only PT Carroll is here. Hello, PT. How are you?
How are you, lads? Devastating here. In a million years, could you imagine it going that way? Devastated for Tom and for Cyril. It was a really interesting fight for as long as it went, and then Tom's head was used like a bowling ball, and here we are, you know, absolutely devastated for him. And I'm sure we're going to talk about this more now.
Of course, yes. And you know, Chuck, I'll start with you. This was a really good fight. It almost went 5 minutes, you know, much talked about the fact that Tom Aspinall's average fight time in the UFC, 2 minutes and 2 seconds. It's on his champion gear. And so I was looking at that clock. Once we got past 2 minutes and 2 seconds, I was like, okay, let's see. You know, there was a lot of talk about Tom only sitting on a stool once in his UFC career, and that was against Andrei Arlovsky. And there was Cyril Gane off the jump, aggressive, taking the fight to Tom, cracking him with some shots, beautiful jab, power shots as well. If you're curious about the stats, guys, very quickly, Tom Aspinall landing 27 of 39, Cyril 30 of 40 significant strikes. They were all, according to UFC stats, and some of these are still kind of coming in, they were all significant strikes. Exact same amount of significant strikes and total strikes. Tom went for one takedown. It got stuffed. Cyril looked really good. Expand a little bit on your thoughts after what we just saw. Heartbreaking, devastating, unceremonious stuff here tonight.
Man, the first thing is it just sucks, right? Like, this is one of those situations. I was trying to think, you know, in the process when this is happening, when's the last time something which was kind of built up to be something big like this in a main event and ended with this kind of thud? And it might be Aspinall. Maybe you guys can correct me if there's one that I'm forgetting, but it might be the Aspinall Blades, the first fight. It was one of those situations where you're like, man, this is like, and that one was in London, and you're like, this is how he's going to lose, right? Like, he gets injured. This is how he's going to lose. And I think we put that behind us in the way that, like, now he's rolling and we get to fully see what he's going to do. 15 months and all this guy has been through, to the point where he's just sick and tired of talking about it. And now you enter this period of, and I mean, I hope he's okay, man, because that was a deep eye poke. I don't know if you guys have ever been poked in the eye, but when that happens and you lose sight for even a minute, it freaks you out. I mean, it's like something that's been in your faculties for your whole life is suddenly shut down. It's not an easy adjustment. And he said, even after the 5 minute period, even as he's being interviewed, he still couldn't see. That's very scary stuff. You have to worry now about the career of Tom Aspinall. Now you have to worry about these types of things. And if everything goes well, you get to the next best case scenario, which is just that he's back into the same situation that he was in, trying to get to this position to defend the title and everything that comes with that. It's just, this is just one of those, I mean, I felt, you could feel the air leave that room, couldn't you? Like, it just felt like it was such a devastating effect. That place just got set, like a cathedral hush came over that place. And it just sucks. I mean, when you put this much into a fight, and the fans rally around it after all the iterations we were looking at, all the hopes, dreams, whatever we were looking for in the heavyweight division, for it to end like this, it's not easy, man. This was just a really, it was heartbreaking for him, to be honest, man.
PT, how about this? And to Chuck's point, this according to the UFC, Tom Aspinall versus Cyril Gane is the second championship fight, not heavyweight championship fight, second championship fight in UFC history to end in a no contest. It's the first such no contest to be called on the night. The other championship no contest, John Jones versus Daniel Cormier, which became a no contest at a later date due to a failed drug test by John Jones. This is historic stuff, and that's why it's hard to kind of find a comparison. It's because we've never seen it with these stakes involved, PT.
Absolutely, and look, you could see what was happening hitting Aspinall as he's going through the motions in that corner. Everything that Chuck said, like, this has been a very, very hard time on that team. And I know a lot of people, Tom has presented himself very well every time he was interviewed, but this is one of the most mentally draining situations I think his father, himself, and the team have been in for a long time, just waiting for this moment, waiting for a chance to be the champion, waiting to fight. I think they showed up this week, and you could see that they were very airy. We're finally here. This is what we're meant to be doing. We're here to fight. We're finally going to be able to do this. The poke happens. He's in the corner. you can see him realize, like, I can't see out of this eye. The ref is coming over, asking him questions, and you can see the panic on his face. And I know because I've never seen this man panic before. I see it in this situation, and you can suddenly realize, like, I want to fight here, but I also cannot see. And then the crowd, you know, the crowd are booing, and you understand that you're after paying money to see this fight. I know you want to see this fight. I'm sitting at home as well. I want to see the fight. A lot of people around the UK have paid money to see this. They obviously are dying to see this heavyweight king do what he does. I think that's why we got the reaction on the mic, honestly. Like, I think that is out of character for Tom, but I completely understand it. Like, this guy is thinking, he's not just thinking, oh no, what about this fight? As Chuck said, he's thinking about, what about my vision here? You know, this guy has kids. He's worried about moving forward with his career. It could be a detached retina. We could have a scratched cornea there. I don't know what the situation is, but never seen Tom like that, but completely understand, given the build-up, given the everything this was meant to be for him. And look, I can imagine how Cyril Gane feels. That first round went incredible. He had a great first round. As you said, he outlanded him. He hit him with a jab in the first 30 seconds, a really short jab that busted his nose, it seemed. He was having a lot of success. Like, it's no one is happy that this has happened. Like, there is no one, oh, look at this, you know, this was an outcome we wanted. This is devastating for absolutely everyone. No one got off here because this went to a no contest. Tom Aspinall was happy fighting in there. It's just a really shit situation, unfortunately.
And let's address it, because I'm seeing it all over our chat. I'm seeing it all online. Tom quit. It got dicey out there for him, and he quit. And you know, if it hasn't happened already, you know John Jones is going to weigh in. This is the guy. This is the guy. For the record, John Jones was offered for the millionth time $30 million to fight this man, and he didn't. You can't claim after the fact, this is the guy, but you know he's going to spike the football. And there's a cruel irony involved in the fact that Tom doesn't fight John Jones but still gets eye poked. But this is tough for him. This is the first time in his career where he's not going to be beloved by people, because people are going to accuse him of being a quitter, because they're going to say that the going got tough and he asked for a way out. I think that's absolute hogwash. He got poked in both eyes. It was straight out of the Three Stooges. But whatever I say doesn't matter. Whatever I say doesn't matter, because, Chuck, you know this is going... I could just see it.
God.
I saw a couple of mentions already. When the going got tough, he bolted, right? That's what people are going to say. That's going to be the takeaway here, right?
It's just so frustrating, man. I mean, and this is just such a default. I'd never know in these days how much the gambling aspect plays a hand in this kind of like reactionary this kind of thing. But dude, they showed it in super slow-mo. Did you watch that? I could almost not watch it, because it was so like, oh god, you know, you get squeamish watching something like that. I don't think he's faking it. It's just so gross to look at, man. I mean, I don't think he's faking. He wasn't looking
look
for
at that.
A way out.
Look at that. Go back to that picture, please. Look at that hand. Look at that finger there. What is that? The index?
That's
long
knuckle deep. He is
yes.
knuckle deep in there.
And then look at the other.
That's a man's
fucking
face, you know? Like, come on.
Here's the thing. And now we could get into semantics. Again, I don't think Cyril Gane did this on purpose. And I'm totally fine with the no contest. But at what point are we going to tell guys to stop? There's no reason to be fighting like this. There's no reason to be fighting like this.
It's also the glove situation. It's not as simple. Like, we know that the gloves, they have said that there is other gloves with a natural curve. We've been down this road before. There is better things that the UFC could do here for this glove situation as well. This happens all the time. This happens multiple times per event. Eye pokes are just part of the sport now, and they shouldn't be.
Let's ask the question. If you're fighting like this and you double poke a guy, should that be a DQ? I mean, ultimately, does it really matter? No, Tom is still the champion. But I'm just saying, why
raises
doing
the question. You know, it's funny. Like, if John Jones does weigh in, like you're saying, and spikes the football, which I believe he will, just like you said, he's notorious for this. You know, you talk to Dominic Reyes or a guy like that, and he's like, man, he poked me so many times that it affected his vision, and like it affected him in that fight. It's just, you see something like this where it actually becomes a factor, and it does raise the question. They've been trying to address this for years, and they had the gloves, like that they were tinkering with, like the curvature on the gloves and all that stuff. I don't know what the answer is, but when you're leading, like you were just demonstrating, when you're leading like that, when you're throwing your hands with your fingers pointed out like that, it's just like everything else. Like, you don't grab the fence and you don't do that, right? Like, you don't just thrust your hands forward towards somebody's face with the fingers out. I think they've got to look at it at some point. I mean, it's affected other big fights. I can't remember. Maybe you guys can off the top of your heads, but I know I've seen this before where This type of situation has stopped a fight. And you kind of think of it when it's this glaring, when it's a pay-per-view and everybody sees it and the world's interest is on it, this is when it becomes a big deal. Yeah.
Here's the thing also. The other thing that, kind of irks me here is, once again, that intentional, unintentional conversation comes up. And to me, it's just like, is it a foul or is it not? And if a right. foul leads to the conclusion of a fight, then the guy should be declared the winner. Ultimately, it doesn't really matter because he wins the fight. Sorry, he doesn't win the fight. He retains the belt. So what really...
Can I ask you something real quick on that point, though? Like, say that he'd already had a slightly more minor eye poke, right? Like, the same thing, but it was a minor eye poke. They go back, and then this happens, like, a minute later. Does that alter, then, that it's accidental versus... You know what I mean? Like,
because he would have done it twice?
Yes, because now it's twice.
I mean, look what happened last week with the multiple shots below the belt with Mike Malott and Neil Magny. I mean, every referee is different, but what Amir Gladys say, I know you're not doing it on purpose. I know it's unintentional, but, you know, these are shots below the belt. Ultimately, it didn't really matter. He never took away the points, but I tend to think that fouls should be reprimanded. Who knows what would have happened here? Here's the thing. Okay, so it was 4 minutes and 35 seconds in. There were 25 seconds left in the fight. Do we think Gan was winning that round? Would Gan have won that round?
I think so.
I thought he was winning the round.
Yeah, so I think Gan was going to get that round, which would have been a huge, huge thing for him. You could almost sense that his confidence was building, right? It felt like once he got past those first 2 minutes, I felt like he's like, yeah, like those old demons that I don't show up in big fights, or the John Jones fight, whatever was plaguing him, the Volkov fight, it felt like all of that was going away. Credit to him. He fought a brilliant round. He really did. And so I don't think he was looking for any kind of way out. I don't think he was trying to hurt him. But again, a foul is a foul. Now the question is, how's Tom going to... There's so many layers to this because...
I know.
Tom's going to have to respond to all of this. He's going to have to deal with all of this. Also, you hear the doctor say, hey, the eyeball's fine. And I'm sure people are going to...
What was that?
They're going to reference that. Like, who is he to say in that? I mean, yes, the eyeball didn't have a chunk taken out of it, but...
It's not now, out of his head.
That is going to be used against Tom. There is no doubt about it that is going to be used against Tom.
For sure.
Is there a silver lining in all of this? Well, does this entice John Jones to be like, oh, you know what? I can actually beat this guy.
We talked about this, PT. We talked about this very thing in the crack.
I think there is multiple. I don't think it's just the fact that, of course, John Jones is going to tweet. Like, and if I'm John Jones' manager, I'm saying, listen, John, I don't know if you watched the fight tonight, but get on X there, mate, and have yourself a good time with this.
Is that $30 million still on the table?
Look, it's not even just that, Ariel. You have to do this fight again, and this fight is way more interesting than it was this week.
100%.
You do Cyril Gane v. Tom Aspinall is suddenly way more interesting than it was for the last year, as we knew, slowly but surely, we were getting this fight. What Gan did in that first round has given us a different perspective that we wouldn't have had on this fight. And I think it makes it a lot more interesting. Like, as well as this, like, I think everybody was watching the clock. That 2 minutes and 2 seconds, and we're going, well, what's it going to look like outside this? What would the third round have looked like? What would the fourth round have looked like?
Right. That's like, the answer. We're heading towards those answers, right? Like, finally.
It was a great fight. All action, power shots. It was riveting. They were both standing there. Like, there was no, you know, they were talking on the broadcast. Oh, they thought Cyril would circle. He would get on his bike, all this stuff. Yeah. There was none of that. Like, he met him in the middle.
Jones is still at home saying, I did this lad in 2 minutes. I did the guy who beat Tom Aspinall. I did him in 2 minutes. Pereira's at home going, these lads just want to strike. They didn't even know takedowns here. This is perfect. Well,
if the UFC was looking for an excuse for Pereira and Joe, I'm sure we'll talk about it. But
oh, there we go.
They just got it, right? If this is the fight now and it has more interest on it, like everything pans out on that level, right?
Oh, here's a tweet from Alex Pereira. Oh. Let's make the heavyweight division great again.
Oh, here we go.
Watching the scene.
This is great for Tom. This is the best.
Listen, this is all good in terms of he's still the champion. He doesn't lose the belt. It's some adversity. Look, he faced adversity worse than this when he blew out his knee against Curtis Blade. Blades fought all the way back to come back and look even better. I mean, as much as those fights are bigger and sexier, you got to run this one back, right?
Got to do it.
You have to do it. Where do you do it is the question, but you got to do it. You got to do it.
Can I just, like, one thing that we just should agree on, like, we should have a, not that we should agree on, I just want to ask you guys, like, this is completely the right thing to do if he has can't see out of that eye, right? Like, have we noticed this? Like, if you're there and you have a guy, you've waited this long for this moment, as we've explained, and suddenly this happens and you cannot see. Like, I think that's an argument people are going to make. Like, oh, you still had one eye; it would have came back eventually. Like, this is not like when you're playing with this game and you're at the very top of this game and you're suddenly earning money and suddenly things are starting to happen to you, because you need to be at the very top of this game to earn like lifelong money. Most of the people that get into this sport, they walk away with nothing. Tom's in that situation now where you can make a lot of money if you win some of these fights. He's in a situation.
I don't even think he's thinking about that though. You know what I mean? Like, I think you said it. Like, he was panicking. Like, he looked like he was panicking, and he was like, "Dude, I cannot see. I cannot see." The look on his face and his reaction to the crowd.
I would be
like
panicking
you said,
too.
It's so out of character.
I would be panicking too. There's so much at stake here. Gone was
game.
And then
the doctor beside you saying, "No, it's out. His eyeball's fine."
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's ridiculous.
He must be going, like, what is happening? Like, what? Like, you know, is this real life?
And then he's getting booed. He's got a bloody nose. That's new for him as well. By the way, I missed this in that Pereira tweet, but if you go back and look at it, there's the Shama statue there, and there's also a Bones equal house. Yeah, it was. Oh, White House? White House.
Yeah,
White House.
We're doing. Yeah, come
it's
on,
a
come
White
on.
House.
Yeah. That's a called Jones, too. I mean, you know,
that's just beige.
Man, how frustrating. How frustrating. We've been waiting since July of 2024. Tom, you know, disposes of Curtis Blaydes very quickly. Then this whole saga, and it culminates with this. It's really a massive bummer. I mean, I was happy for Ciryl Gane, just the fact that I felt like he was able to shed some of those demons. Like, he really showed up. He proved that he belonged. He looked to be in great shape. Did you see those those pictures from him like a year ago to now? Somehow his waist got even smaller.
He looks incredible shape. His jab,
phenomenal,
unbelievable.
Just, you have to run it back. You have to run it back. Maybe you do that springtime event in London. Now again, Dana White alluded to this. Now that I think it was in that interview with Adam Catterall of TNT Sports. Now that Paramount Plus isn't going the pay per view route, you have to start doing these afternoon shows. You have to start picking strategic times. Look, their friends at WWE are doing it all the time. They're doing international events all the time now for their PLEs. So maybe it's a title fight in London or somewhere in Europe, or maybe it's just a big Vegas fight. But to me, as much as I would love to see John tweet, "All right, I'll take that fight now," or Pereira say, "You know what, let me go for three," it's got to be Ciryl Gane versus Tom Aspinall again the next time these two guys fight. I mean, it's just any other route
way more
would be a disservice.
Yeah. Like, and to your point, his stock went up, right? His stock goes up because he showed up as a defiant front.
There's
to
great
this whole thing. He was a huge underdog. And like the way he was looking, I mean,
you know, like he was such a heavy favorite here. I think it's going to be much closer for the bookies next time around. I guarantee that.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm saying. So I feel like when you hit upon it being more interesting, that part is solved. Like, as long as Tom is able to go and they can turn this around fairly quickly, and you could see how much Gane was invested in this by just him breaking down and, you know, crying essentially on his knees there. He wanted it as bad, right? Like, it's just, you can't, like, we go into this game and the whole idea is to find resolution and to, like, set up the next thing. There was so much at play, so much sideline interplay with everything going on. We got no resolution. There's only one thing to do to find that resolution now.
Yeah. This reminds me a lot of 2 Degrees. It's very different, but it reminds me a little bit of Daniel Dubois in that people are now going to call Tom Aspinall a quitter. And, you know, it's people who don't possess like any sort of DNA that Tom Aspinall possesses in terms of doing this for a living. And that's just, you know, the price of being a pro athlete. But the idea that this guy would quit, would look for a way out, is so absurd. It is truly absurd. And look, let's not hide the fact that we all like Tom very much. There's no doubt about it. He's a great guy. He's a great representative. He has done nothing for anyone not to like him. To suggest that he quit, you could say that he lost that first round. I think he lost that first round. I think we all agree that he lost that first round.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You could, I mean, that is fair game. But to suggest that he quit, that he wanted a way out, that he looked for a way out because the going got tough, is just something that I'm not going to subscribe to. He
but
got poked in both eyes.
It's come on. It's the age of social media. Like, this is the reaction we're always going to get. And as Chuck said, gambling plays a big part in these things as well. You know, people are pissed off. People have put money into this. People have paid for the pay-per-view. People have bought tickets. They're booing because they didn't get the show. Like, you know, it probably is directed at Tom, like, because of the situation. But, like, it's just a freak situation. I had my dad downstairs. He doesn't watch a lot of mixed martial arts. He'd never seen someone getting poked in the eye before in a fight. He was like, this guy needs to be banned forever about Cyril Gane. I was like, no, this happens all the time. He's like, what? People get poked in the eye all the time in the sport? And I was like, yeah, multiple times per event. So a multitude of reactions across the board.
Also, it's supposed to, it's a main event, and in the situation, just for the crowd there, like, it's supposed to be your, yes, but we still got this big heavyweight fight at the back. Yeah. You already had a couple of fights where they were booing fairly mercilessly. Of course, the Almeida fight, where it was just, you know, it just wasn't much to watch. I think there were times in the Umar fight where people were booing. So it's like, you kind of keep it in the back of your mind, well, at least we have this big fight at the back of it. And when that doesn't pay off, they're going to boo.
So according to Tapology, Tom was a minus 400 favorite going into this fight. Gane plus 310. Now I'm starting to see some early lines circulating, and they've got Tom as a minus 185, Gane plus 160. So that suggests just how close this fight was. PT, you've watched Tom a lot over the years. What surprised you about all of this? What was it? Was it just Gane just was aggressive and was beating him to the punch, so to speak, or was there something else going on? The one takedown didn't go his way. What did you think?
I just thought he didn't find his distance early. He didn't get going the way he would have wanted to get going. Again, things just weren't going right. And a lot of things have been going so well for him in the octagon, obviously. Gane as well, very front forward early on. That right hand straight away is like, straight away, you're like, holy
cracked
shit.
Him,
like, my nose is busted immediately. And then we saw the takedowns. He was kind of, I don't know if he was feinting takedowns to some degree to try and let a shot off afterwards, but he just couldn't find Gane where he'd usually find guys. I felt like he was finding it very difficult to find his range, plant his feet, and just land a big, big overhand, really is what he was trying to do. And I feel like he was just, his feet weren't where he wanted them to be. Obviously, he could have settled into the fight. Like, we've all said that Gane won the first round, but in no way was I like, this fight is beyond Tom. I was like, this is going to be a really great fight. Like, this is a fight that's going to be contested on the feet, it looks like. And both lads have had success. I just thought Gane had more. I didn't think Tom was out of the fight by any means, but I didn't think he was settled as he usually gets settled. Like, even against Pavlovich, remember, he eats that shot and suddenly it's like, oh, I'm in a fight, and he gets going straight away. I don't think he got himself where he wanted to be after eating that right hand. I still think he was chasing it to a degree.
It felt like a little bit of a countdown, right? Like a countdown too for the takedown. Like, he was going to start to go for that a little bit more. He really hadn't even begun that part of the game. So
yeah,
there was definitely a lot of stuff left and pending there.
Prime example as to why you kind of have to wait for the entire card to finish, because I put out there after the Volkov win, the very ho-hummish fight between him and Jalton Almeida, which we all kind of thought was going to be the number one contender fight. If Pereira and Jones are doing their own thing over here, these two guys were probably fighting for a number one contender slot. And let's be honest, a lot of us thought Tom Aspinall would beat Cyril Gane. And I said, is he going to get a title shot off a performance like this? For the record, Alexander Volkov won a fight, which was, to me, reminiscent, if you guys recall, Michael Venom Page versus Logan Storley in a fight back in 2022. I think it actually happened in Ireland, if I'm not mistaken. In any event, Storley took him down repeatedly, won the fight, but didn't do anything with the takedowns. And Page was a lot busier off his back, just doing, it was France, just doing whatever he could off his back. And I thought that was enough to win the fight. And it was very reminiscent of that fight, because Almeida was taking Volkov down with relative ease, but was doing nothing with the takedowns. I mean, absolutely nothing. If you look at the stats, it's kind of wild. I got the stats right over here. So, Jalton Almeida against Alexander Volkov, Almeida was 7 of 9 as far as takedowns are concerned, but as far as significant strikes, just 9 of 10, 27 of 33 total strikes. Meanwhile, Volkov, who was taken down 7 times, 123 of 30 of a 130 in terms of total strikes and 24 of 27 in terms of significant strikes. So he got the nod, but it wasn't exactly, you know, a fight to write home about. And by the way, I agree with the judges, and it was great to see them score the fight that way. And so I said, like, wow, Lerone Murphy can't get a title shot after a spinning back elbow win, a spectacular one against Aaron Pico, but Volkov's going to get a title shot. just based off the fact that he's the de facto number one contender now, kind of a sad state of affairs at heavyweight. And now it seems like they're not going to have to worry about that because they're going to have to run this back. Unless one of you thinks Volkov should leapfrog Gunn and get the rematch instead of Gunn.
You're not going to have me arguing that. No. I will say, because we have been given officials a lot of shit over the last couple of weeks, I thought they had a really great night. Rich Mitchell and Matt Goddard took points very early for fouls early on. I love to see it. They set a precedent tonight where they're like, this is what's going to happen. And I thought they were really good. You mentioned the judge's decision with Volkov. I thought there was a few fights that were very difficult to score. And I think they came away and they did a great job with the cards. Wood Delgado very early on was kind of like that. Mitch Raposo and Muxum. From very difficult fights to score. But I think they did a great job today. And I just feel like we need to say that because I think we've been a bit
100%. But I thought we were fair. I thought we
were fair.
By the way, if you listen to Jason Herzog talk to Gunn's, I think he was talking to him specifically, but maybe someone close to you could hear it, but you couldn't see it. He said, "I know it wasn't intentional, but it's still foul." Did you hear that?
Yeah.
That suggests to me that he was going to take a point away, right? If in fact the fight resumed, correct? And I feel like they heard the criticism from last week, and you saw here, and Andy Foster even alluded this to me, they need to stop with the warnings and just penalize, right? And so I'll ask you guys this. I'll ask you this, Chuck. If he was on the verge of taking a point away, shouldn't that be a DQ? If he was going to reprimand him for the foul.
That's a great point.
Shouldn't that be a DQ?
You fall right into these gray areas, right? Like that they just, there's no definitive protocol on this sort of thing, really. Like it's still based on judgment. And that's why I've heard you talking about this before. There is a point in time when you're like, it has to just be a foul or not a foul. It's just like if you're watching any other sport, and yes, there's some subjectivity to what a foul is, but if it's a foul, like if they blow the whistle, right, it's a foul. It's just that's what it is. Or if a guy goes to the ground, and there's contact, it's a foul. You're not allowed to like slap a guy's arm, right? Like you just know you're not supposed to do that. So if you poke a guy in the eye and you're leading your attack with your fingers out, it should just be a foul. I mean, at some point it has to be, right? Like this feels like, I remember you saying like sometimes we're in the leather helmet days, you know, on certain aspects of the sport. And this seems to me to be one of those aspects. Like we keep going round and round without resolution as to what to do about it. It's a foul or it's not a foul.
I'm seeing a tweet here from our good friend New York Rick. Oh, I can't wait to talk to New York Rick about this on Monday. I mean, he might be able to chime in right now. I don't even know if he's there. Frankie, is Rick there right now? Come on, Rick.
In the room with us. No.
He's not. He's I just saw that. Where's he tweeting this from? Where's he tweeting this from? The cafeteria over there?
Or the
come on, Rick. About, no, what's he doing?
Wait, listen to this. The takes about the first round of Tom Aspinall versus Cyril Gane are getting wild. Okay.
All right.
We all
haven't seen them. I haven't seen
them. Yeah. Reminds me of Leon Edwards versus Bilal Muhammad and the tales being spun about it being a foregone conclusion of who was going to win before the eye poke stopped it. I'm sorry. Leon was winning that fight very, very clearly. What are we talking about here?
Yeah.
No. Shit. Don't suggest for a second. This is not the same.
I'm here.
go on, Rick.
Hold on. Andy's got to give me a
no coward. He's no coward.
Awful. Don't even compare the two.
It's such a perfect take. I'm so happy that you said, I came in just to hear this nonsense about like,
awful.
Oh, Leon Edwards is on the way to smoking this guy.
He was smoking.
And then
smoking.
An eye poke. It was nothing.
Smoking.
It was a nothing first round.
Smoking. And by the way, it was a round and a half.
It wasn't. It happened 18 seconds into round two.
A round plus. This was sub one round.
Oh, in a 16. Oh, the difference of the 40 seconds is what makes it. I got it.
It was a huge 18 seconds, Rick.
It's the exact same scenario. These fantasies that are being spun right now about how Cyril Gane was about to dominate this fight because he had a successful first.
Oh, you're 100%. See, we agree on that. I just don't agree on the Leon Bilal fight.
Yeah,
we agree
exactly
on this.
All right, lads, let's talk about the fight that happened today, okay? Come on. Rick, you're cooking. Go, Rick. Rick, go.
Have a good show.
That's all you had to say. But he is right about the first part. The only narrative. Unless you're sane-minded people like us who will be called glazers, who will be called biased, the only narrative that you will hear from people is that Gunn was winning that fight and he was looking for a way out. Guess what? I was going to say that's going to sell a lot of pay-per-views, but it ain't because this fight ain't happening in 2025.
No, that's a great point.
It's going to sell a lot of subs.
Yeah.
Subs. People are going to sign up. Actually, it might be on pay-per-view. TNT. Platform. Was this a pay-per-view in Europe on TNT?
Quid.
So there you go. Quid. It's going to be a pay million. For the first time ever, it's going to be deal. A pay-per-view for you guys and not for us. Right?
Yeah, my dad's watching. He's like, we fucking paid 30 quid for this, did you?
You know yourself, old man. You know yourself. What do you think? Chuck, Pereira's next fight, is it at heavyweight? As a result, does this change your opinion on what's going on? Oh, Chuck knows something right here. What does Chuck know about his neighbor?
I don't, man. Oh, okay. I don't. I haven't talked. Right. You talk to him more than I do.
His neighbor.
No. I do think so, though. I think that he wants that fight, and that's that. I feel like John Jones, the red carpet's out for that fight now, right? Like, they just rolled it out for that to happen.
Well, so, you don't think, is there any part of you that think John says, okay, you know what? I'll take this fight now. I'll take this Tom fight. Because, you know, if I would, maybe I'm wrong, but if John calls up Dana right now and says, I'll take it, give it to me. Do you think they say, hey, Cyril,
they just push him right out?
But we've given you three title fights.
I don't think they can. I don't think they can.
I don't know.
Yeah, they can
I
do whatever think, they want, man. They're giving Diego Lopez another title fight after he just lost the belt. He won one fight.
But if Tom were smoking him, if Tom were lighting him up, and then this happened, I'd be like, yes, of course that's going to. But I just think that he put on enough of a performance, that bloody aspect too, just the bloody nose and everything. It was enough of a performance where you're like, I don't know if you can just push him aside here. Which is crazy, because we thought he was the interloper in the, like, all these wild scenarios, and now all of a sudden we're saying, no, it's got to be gone.
Well, can you let it play out to a degree, lads? Like, can you let this Pereira-Jones thing play out because they have to do Aspinall and Gann again,
right?
And then you just got to hope to God that Jones doesn't just win and decide, you know what, actually, I'm okay for another couple of years again.
But do you guys think that, I mean, in all seriousness, PC, we talked about this. I was like, maybe Aspinall tries to look a little vulnerable in there to entice, you know. I know he did not do that, but, like, does it have that effect, though? Does Jones now say, like, you know what? I see something that I think I can
100%.
Do. This.
He's going to weigh in. He's 100% going to weigh in, and I think this is going to make him a little bit more interested. Be like, oh, this guy was beatable. Listen, John Jones, wherever he may be right now, is thinking, I should have taken that $30 million. There's no doubt about that. I should have taken that fight, and I would have won that fight. That's what he's telling himself right now. There's no doubt about it. You know this because the moment he retired, he announced his comeback. So he already had buyer's remorse, so to speak, and now it's worse. The question is, though, do they run it back with Cyril? Do they try to do I think it's what they should do. I think it's the right thing to do, but I don't think it's fait accompli. I think there's too many
Pereira and Jones
options
a bigger
right
fight?
Now.
Anyway, that's Jones and Pereira is the biggest fight. So, like, is that not the priority over this? So it makes perfect sense to let that play out. And you know what, Errol? I hope Jones is thinking that. I really do. I think that is the best outcome for us fight people who love fights. Jones comes back. Like, I would love to see him come back. I'd love to see him fight Pereira. I'd love to see him fight Aspinall. But I need to see Aspinall fight Gann. I need to see that now.
Yeah.
That's important. You just cannot... Yeah, I know it's going
to
say no contest on paper or whatever.
It was such a good fight. It was such a good fight. Yeah, we
so
all got to see it.
It was left on a cliffhanger, essentially, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you don't know what was going to happen there.
Dana White is addressing the media in Abu Dhabi right now. Here are some highlights, courtesy of our friend Aaron Bronstetter, who I don't think is there, but is watching the stream. He writes, White thought it was a great showing for Gann, but obviously a terrible ending. Thought the fight was heading for being a good fight based on what we saw. Okay, they plan on rebooking the fight.
Nice.
That is what Dana White is saying.
Okay.
White also says that Tom Aspinall is on his way to the hospital to get his eye checked out. And he says that no matter what the UFC tries to do with the gloves, eye pokes are going to happen. So they introduced those new gloves. They got rid of them for whatever reason. And
with a lot of KOs going down, wasn't it?
Yeah, what a weird time that was, right?
That was so, you know what, we're going back to the old ones this
way. What a weird time. Okay, let's quickly talk about some other results because we've been talking about this for a minute here. Mackenzie Dern is the new UFC strawweight champion. Chuck, your thoughts on the fight and her being the champ now at 115?
It was a pretty, like, we were talking about this fight going in, and I think Ben Folks had mentioned that she's a little unpredictable. Like, sometimes you think that she's gotten better in a certain area. She shows up the next time looking raw again. This particular time, she was really dialed in. I mean, I felt like her striking looked really good. She had some really good combos in there from the early portions. I think she knew, like, she was going to get taken down. She mentioned that she thought that she would end up on her back in these situations. But You could tell that she was pretty comfortable there. She was landing shots. She was still being offensive from her back. I thought she just looked really good. And that goes double for Jandiroba because, you know, at 37 years old, to fight her way back and or to fight her way into this situation is unlikely. And I wrote about it this week and we talked to her and all that stuff. And to see her go out there and kind of execute it, just shy, obviously, of getting it done. But I thought that she put on a pretty good performance, too, just in, you know, much better than her first time through. So in my mind, that fight delivered.
Yeah, and you know, there was an interesting little thing about this fight. We were talking about the Volkov-Almeida fight, Pizzi. Jandiroba was quite active with her takedowns. She shot for 17, landed 9 of them, but wasn't doing as much, again, with the takedowns. Dern outstruck her, outlanded her, total strikes and significant strikes, and she alluded to that in her post-fight interview that she was happy that, you know, they weren't just awarding takedowns. You know, Dern is a very popular fighter in the UFC. This is probably the best case scenario for them. And, you know, very impressed with how far she's come. Remember, this is a fighter who was having a lot of trouble making weight in her early days. Ever since she became a mom, for whatever reason, she was able to change everything. And she's been through a lot. And she's been quite open about the personal stuff that she's been through. So a very nice moment, especially with her dad after the fight. And she did mention, and I don't know if this is 100% accurate, but she mentioned that she believes that it's just her and Fabricio Werdum who have won ADCC, IBJJF, and now a UFC title.
Yeah, it's incredible. And you know what the most impressive thing about it is? Like, she didn't look like a jiu-jitsu player in there. She looked like an MMA fighter. And even when she was taken down, I think earlier in her career, she would have just relied on her guard. She has such a brilliant guard. But I think she recognized going into this fight before it even started, like, I can't do that with Verna. She's too good in top position. She will take me down. So I think that's why you saw her kind of, she didn't spend as much time trying to set up submissions. She just went straight away to strikes. And she was landing some really, really nasty elbows from bottom position. On the feet, I think Jason Brillo will be so happy with what he saw. She was landing 1-2 so well. She really marked up Verna's face really early on, like showing that like she's having a real impact here. But I thought it was a great performance. And look, she's been through a lot of shit, Mackenzie Dern, as you said, as she told you on your show. I think it's a great story too. Her dad is a legend. She is a legend of grappling in her own right. Go and watch that Gabby Garcia grappling match if you haven't seen it before. She's absolutely amazing. I think it's probably the best move for the company as well. Like it's a great story. She is well used to the spotlight. She was always in the spotlight even when she back in her jiu-jitsu days. So I think it's good for the company. I think she had a great account of herself.
As far as who might be next for her, I think it's hard to say right now because if Zhang loses to Valentina,
yes,
I suspect she goes back down to 115, and that would be the fight to make, right? If she wins and stays at 125, then it's kind of, I don't know. Then there's no real layup as far as a number one contender there. Like Virna has won, Tatiana Suarez has won. I don't think Tatiana's getting another crack at the belt.
Two title fights today, and we're more confused about the divisions than we've ever been. Both of them, which is pretty incredible. Looking for this closure, right?
We just at least she fights next. Like, what is it? Like 3-4 weeks? It's like she's coming up quickly. The timing is okay to wait it out and see, you know, if she wins that fight.
I would love to see that fight. By the way,
yeah,
Zhang versus
That version we just saw of Dern. You know, knowing what we know of Weili, do you think that would have been competitive? Like, because I was pretty impressed with her, but like that's a big step, man.
Zhang is the best female fighter in the world right now.
Yeah, I'm saying no.
Yeah,
I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean the Zhang that we saw against Suarez. Yeah, I don't think anyone touches her. I think I don't know. Yeah, I don't even know what the odds are, but I consider her the favorite going into the Shevchenko fight, despite the fact that she's moving up.
I think she's gonna win. Yeah.
Yep, I agree with that.
What are the odds? UFC 322 odds, Zhang Chevy.
So the grappling exchanges are crazy in that fight, Jandiroba and Dern. Like they were like constantly sweeping each other. Like one stage was rolling across.
There's a couple times where they both just collided. Like their offensive momentum did just collide in the middle and kind of almost butt heads. It was crazy.
Zhang, a slight favorite, guys. -120, Shevchenko -105. That Umar Nurmagomedov. With the unanimous decision win against Mario Bautista. All three judges, guys, had it 30-27 for Umar, I thought that Bautista won the second round with the knee that dropped him. Doesn't really matter. Here's the scorecard, but it really doesn't matter because Umar won that fight fair and square. He beats a guy who was on a very impressive winning streak, who had some hard-fought wins over some, you know, top competition. Obviously, the Aldo fight, much talked about. The Patchy Mix fight, much talked about. All that stuff and more. And can I just say, here's the thing that kind of irks me. Can I just say this? Here are the things that kind of irked me. So, Umar Nurmagomedov beat Corey Sandhagen and he got a title shot, right? Corey Sandhagen was the only ranked guy that he had ever beaten. Amazing winning streak. He was 18-0 after that fight. He gets a title shot. He loses that title shot, right? He loses that title fight fair and square. He loses to Merab in January. So, what is it? 9 months ago. He's won one fight since then. Right. And it's like this entitlement that, like, yeah, I'm next. You were the contender. You beat one guy in the top 15. One guy. You got a title shot. You've now just beaten one guy. Why are you next? I don't understand. Why are you next? And I look at a guy like Eamon Zahabi, who's won seven in a row, who hasn't gotten a crack. Why does he deserve it more than him? I don't get that. Can someone explain this to me?
Well, I mean, I agree with you. And, the, you know, like going back to the, you mentioned the Sandhagen fight. Remember they kind of expedited this whole thing and put him on ABC? It was like an ABC fight. And you were like, we're only doing this. They're literally doing this because I think the name Nurmagomedov, they're like, we want to put this back into a, you know, the center of attention. So you could kind of understand it in that respect. But if you compare that what just happened, right, like in this year, going back to January, where Merab has been, what he's done, and like you mentioned, other people within the division, what they're doing versus Umar, it doesn't automatically warrant anything. The only reason is because I think there's a certain amount of people, fans, and media who think that Umar is the only guy who presents a real threat to him, right? I feel like that's probably where it comes from. But if you talk to Umar, and I did this week, that entitlement is like ingrained in him. Like he fully believes that he's, you know, one good showing and he's in there. But you're absolutely right, because he'd only had, what, a handful of fights the first time as he went into that ABC card against Sandhagen. He only had a handful of UFC fights. So for him to be kind of in that royalty position where you're like, okay, this guy, we're just, if he wins one, he's back. It seems a little strange to me. I'm with you on that. I think it's just the name, and it's the expectation that he brings, like a graver sort of doubt to the situation.
I just want to say, I don't like when someone loses a title fight as a challenger, wins one fight, and gets another crack. That makes it seem like you wanted that guy to win, and you're trying to even things out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I will say, seemed like the old team Nurmagomedov was seeing a completely different tune when it came to a man called Paul Hughes.
That's
a good call, man.
I just a bit of hypocrisy there, guys. You know what I'm saying? I thought you couldn't do this. You need to be four or five guys. But we'll say he's a hell of a fighter, isn't he? And also, I'd like to say Bautista goes up in my estimation too. He had some great moments. Like the rolling toe hold he hit in the first grapple exchange.
What
of
a dog.
Like,
a guy who's very difficult to like do anything against. He had some moments. You know what I mean? Like that knee too. For just a minute, you're like, oh shit, this could steer the whole thing.
He's a nightmare, dude. That guy, for anyone else in the division, he's a nightmare. I think Umar's class, and I subscribe to the thought that Chuck had there. Like, if Merab continues to be the champion here, he at least took two rounds off him. Now, I know the 3, 4, and 5 were exceptionally dominant by Merab after that point, but at least we saw, like, this guy gave him trouble for two rounds.
His hand was compromised, PC. What was he going to do? His hand was compromised.
I know, exactly, right? Like, we got to see what happens in round 6, 7, and 8 now. I think he's brilliant. And I found it quite endearing at the end when they said, like, DC was asking about Khabib, and he's like, I keep trying to be like Khabib, but I just can't. And I was like, yeah, fair enough.
Dude, his takedown, his entries... It's like he shot out of a cannon, some of those. Like that picture
like
that they just showed. It looked like he was like flying in from off the top rope or something, man. I mean, he gets in there so quick. It's just very difficult to deal with.
He's so fluid, right? Like even the grappling situations, like it is different to Khabib, because when Khabib hit top position on you, you just didn't move. You're just, I'm here. Whereas Bautista was offering up so much movement on the bottom. Umar was constantly flowing off
mixing positions. It's ridiculous.
Oh, incredible.
And I think that was a scramble as well. I don't think they settled there. I think they kept rolling through like two little mini tornadoes. It was an incredible watch that fight. Brilliant.
But by the way, I need to upgrade my situation here because I use my phone as my camera because I've had problems with other cameras, and DC is calling me, and I don't know if he wants to come on the show, but I'm getting a notification that he's calling me from Abu Dhabi. I wonder what
Rick,
he thinks.
He's text him there. Rick, let's see if we can get him in.
He's a guy who knows a thing or two about getting poked in the eye, and he was right there front and center. By the way, in case you're wondering, and God help us if this goes haywire as well, the Big Uz Joseph Parker is making the walk right now at the O2. Against Fabio Wardley. It's about to kick off on DAZN pay-per-view. What happened to them getting rid of the pay-per-views over there? What happened to that? In any event,
that's another 20 stats for me today. I mean, how many stats do you want off me today? Fighting, you know what I mean?
But Jesus. But the Parker Wardley fight is about to kick off. So let's hope that there's a clear, decisive winner in that one. It would be horrible if not. So what do you guys say? Is it Umar versus the winner of Merab versus Piotr Jan? And by the way, worth noting, Merab this year, if he beats Jan and fights Jan, of course,
right,
that will be two fights against Jan. There were two fights against O'Malley, right, and then it's two fights against Umar. That's why I'm saying, like, could we see him against some fresh matchups? Could we see him get some fresh blood in there? That's all I'm saying. And it just comes across to me as like you're trying to right the wrong.
Yeah.
You're trying to even things out by having him fight these guys over and over again, especially so quickly.
I think Merab would agree with you that he should have new blood. I'm pretty sure he doesn't want to have to, you know, not that he's worried about, I don't think he would be too worried about losing the fight. He might see him as a tough matchup, but I'm sure there's a point when you're like, I'm beating these guys, you know, like, let's move on, you know?
I'm trying to see if Dana White said anything about that. I'm reading here. No. He just said once again that they're going to try to look to rebook Aspinall versus Gunn as soon as possible. Okay,
how
let's talk about.
Say about this, lads. Like, how do you think they're feeling?
Honestly, I don't really think they get that pissed. They're about to get $1.1 billion. Like, well, what is there to be pissed about? The show rolls on. You know,
dude, you were out there for UFC 112, Abu Dhabi.
Yeah,
like you remember how pissed he was. I kind of miss those days when you know it was just like, I'll cut him. You know, I don't care if he's the best fighter in the world. I'll cut him.
I know. Different time.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is crazy. That was the first stop back in 2010. Azamat Mirzakhanov defeating Alexander Rakic, a little nasty short right there, and that was in the first round, 3-11. I mean, it was just like a boom, a quick shot. Rakic looked phenomenal. Everyone was talking about this all week. He looked to be in tremendous shape. Mirzakhanov afterwards, like Rakic was going up to him and probably a little bit out of it, is still talking some trash. That was a little strange. And said afterwards that what did he say? What did he say? He wanted, and by the way, his nickname is The Professional, just for the record, which I thought was funny.
I love this. Come on.
Okay, but what is next for this guy? Because he was talking, what, number one contender?
Yeah.
That's the only ranked guy that he's defeated.
Very well.
Yeah. He was shooting a shot.
Yeah.
But now a player.
Have a name,
tough one,
right?
For Rakic. Yeah. That's the only ranked guy he's beaten, to the best of my knowledge.
Yeah. He's great. He's a bit of a bollocks, obviously, you know, talking about his shit like that afterwards. He's starching, lads. He's shorter than everyone. He's got a bit of a belly. What's not to like? You know what I mean? I like this energy.
He's an everyman.
I love what he brought to the table tonight. I just knocked the guy out. This should be a big moment. Now I'm going to talk some more shit.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
I'm going to put this hat on. Don't really. Looks a bit awkward. Didn't work for him.
Fair play.
I mean? I like it. I like what he's bringing to the table. He's a bit of a bollocks. I like that.
You're going against a guy, I think, Rakic, who it felt. I don't know how you guys felt about him. I always felt like he kind of got cut off at the pass. Like, we never really saw how good he was, should have been, to where he got, like, so he has this 3-fight losing streak. I really felt like he was going to put out his best performance tonight, not just because, not just to get the win, but, like, you know, you don't want to be on that, you don't want to be cut, you know, at some point where you're like, you're losing so many fights that they're just like, he's not worth it. And I thought he looked that good. So I feel for him, man. You get caught with something like that. And I mean, honestly, the range from that shot was so acute, like that angle, like the angle he took, the short punch. It's just, what are you going to do, man? If that thing's containing power, enough power to put you down, I mean, there's not much you can do about that. So I feel bad for him, man. Like, now, because I think at one point in his career, if you go back maybe 5-6 years, I thought he would certainly be a big player in this division. It just never really panned out for him.
circling back, because I can't stop thinking and I'm seeing all the stuff that's rolling in here. Our old boss, Bill Simmons, weighing in, guys.
Oh, no.
Shout out to Big Bill. Shout out to Ben Simmons as well. Gan poked Aspinall in both eyes and doubled down and went back for seconds on the same eye poke and dug even deeper. If that's not a DQ, then what do you have to do on an eye poke for a DQ? Do you need to also use a shrimp fork? Maybe I don't understand the rules.
That's not a good visual.
I mean, but listen. I know it's the unpopular opinion, but really, like, why isn't that a DQ? And again, it doesn't really ultimately matter, but really, it's
because they know this could happen. Like,
no, it's
because
it's unintentional.
I know
it was in his brain.
The eye poke thing, if they made a protocol like that, it could cost you a lot of fights on any given night, you know?
Great quote here. Great quote here, guys. Dana White asked about how to improve intentional / unintentional eye pokes, or how to prove if they're intentional or unintentional. Quote, who the fuck knows? Who gives a shit? What are you going to do?
That's how I feel about it too, actually. You know, that's
no more fucks to give.
another quote here from Dana White. What makes sense is to do the rematch. I'm not saying that's going to happen. Anything can happen.
Great.
Question was asked about Volkov being number one contender and getting a chance.
They don't match make right after, so it's like
no, anything Tuesday, can happen apart from Volkov being next in line for that title. That's what
I can assure you that's not happening.
I'll tell you what,
apart from that.
That was the most depressing fight of the night. The most terrifying moment of the night, no doubt happened during the prelims when Quillen Salkeeld knocked out Nasrat Haqparast with a head kick, and Haqparast was out cold, guys. Like, ooh, face first on the mat, did not
legs
move.
Twitching.
It was kind of convulsing. Like, yeah, very, very scary stuff. Quillen is a great story. Took the fight on 10 days notice. These boys from Perth, they can freaking pack a punch, and I guess a kick as well. But, I mean, the power and just the... The technique was beautiful. It was just kind of shocking to see Haqparast out cold on the mat. But he had a great, great showing, great post-fight interview. Again, took the fight on short notice, cut a whole bunch of weight to make this fight, to accept it on short notice. And we were happy to see Haqparast eventually stand up, sit up, yeah, and then stand up and seem to be okay. But that was scary stuff, Chuck.
Man. You remember was it Terry Etim, the fight where he got like erased with that wheel kick? What was it again? It was
Edson Barboza.
How could I forget that? Like the way he fell, it was like his whole body went limp, like a corpse, right? And that was what this reminded me of, because his body just shut down. You didn't see any movement, even, you know, as he fell down. It was just timber to the ground, face down, and to see anybody face planted like you're looking at him here is always scary, right? Especially when, because they move the cameras pretty fast. I don't think they want you concentrating on the whoever just got conquered there. But like, you could see him twitching, and it's just such a it's always such a scary moment, because the UFC specifically has dodged any real problems this way. And like, I don't know how you guys feel, but I'm always like, you see something like, is this the time? Is this the one? And you don't want that, right? Like, you just your thoughts go to the. Your thoughts go to that guy in his corner and everybody, and you just want to make sure they're okay. So it's always like a relief. They don't really focus on the guy, but it's always a relief when you catch a glimpse of him sitting up.
100%. No, I mean, I tweeted about the Alex Pereira knockout of Thomas Powell in 2020. That's probably the most terrifying knockout that I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. But when these guys are out like that, it's so scary, and it also reminds you of like how lucky we've been just as a MMA fan base community, the sport, to not see anything worse, because this is just
true.
You know, it's crazy stuff that we're witnessing. By the way, Mirzakhanov did not win a performance bonus, somewhat surprisingly, but he did tie Alex Pereira and Carlos Ellberg for most light heavyweight knockouts since 2022 with 5. So we were talking about him kind of climbing that ladder. He also has the second longest active win streak in the light heavyweight division with 6 consecutive wins. Number one is Carlos Ellberg. Salkeeld did win a bonus for his big victory. Ikram Aliskerov defeated fan favorite Ju-Young Park via unanimous decision. Ludovit Klein and Mateusz Rebecki, they fought to a great one, a majority decision. By the way, they won the fight of the night.
Yeah.
So shout out to them. Who just said that? I'm looking at too much stuff here. Was that PT who said it was a great fight?
Brilliant fight.
Yeah.
Brilliant fight.
Tell us about it.
You see, they call Renbecky, I believe, is how you call the name. They call him Rombecks. They have a wild way of pronouncing that
Rubesky?
Name. They call him Rombecky on the broadcast. And I just texted a lad who speaks Polish today. And I said, please tell me how to say his name. And he said it was Renbecky. James Cioni. That's how he said it. But incredible fight. I felt like Klein was battering him for the first two rounds. And then Renbecky comes out of nowhere in the third round and just starts caving him in. And I thought he was nearly going to stop the fight. I think one of the judges had it a draw. Crazy fight to score, but absolutely brilliant. In the final exchange, Renbecky is landing horrific blows on Klein. He was on the ground. The fight stops. Renbecky gets up, shaking his head as if, I don't think I've done enough. Klein stays on the ground. He can't get up. So when they're reading out the decision, they have Renbecky beside Goddard here. And over on the other side is Klein on a chair who just lifts his hands when they announce him the winner. It was absolutely spectacular. Brilliant fight.
Did you see?
Brilliant fight. And by the way, Klein won via majority decision. Yes, Chuck.
I was just going to say, like, that was a funny visual, but like for DC to go over there and like talk to him, like, let's take a look with this big smile on his face at the ankle right here. Like being broken. I was like, what kind of sadistic shit is this, man? He throws to the truck. Let's talk to the truck about this. Yeah. You know, that was good theater.
And speaking of sadistic, what about Walter Walker? Four straight heel hooks now. Four straight. He ties Husamar Paharis for the most heel hook submissions in UFC history. But Paharis didn't have them four in a row at heavyweight. He's also tied now for the longest active finish streak in the UFC with four straight. I mean, he has the longest active winning streak in the heavyweight division with four straight. I saw them say that, and I'm like, oh, Tom may, you know, tie that later tonight. Well, no, actually not.
You jinxed him.
Walter Walker. No, I didn't say it. I just thought it, all right? I just thought it. Walter Walker sits alone with the guy is like a pro wrestler. He's like an old school pro wrestler where he has a finishing move and you know he's going to try to hit it, and it's undeniable and inevitable.
You know
it's amazing.
Crazy that is. A heavyweight. Yeah. Like heavyweight. Heel hooks. You know, not to say, like, you know, I was a bit of a leg lock guy myself back in the day, you know?
No,
but when you're going underneath there, you're going to get your head caved in. And these lads are like the biggest guys in the world, and you're basically exposing yourself to be like, go ahead, smash my fucking face in. And this lad's just like, no problem, I'll do it anyway. It's amazing, honestly.
I felt like he carried a chip on his shoulder, man, because he was supposed to fight, right, a couple weeks ago in Brazil. And that was just, he was going to have this home game, and now he's going across the globe, you know, to fight this. I felt like he was carrying a chip on his shoulder in this fight. It was fun to see.
It's very fun. He's a very fun character. I mean, his brother is as well. But that was incredible. He did that to Louis Sutherland, by the way. It's mesmerizing to watch a heavyweight do that now four straight times. Unbelievable. He, by the way, won the final performance bonus. Nathaniel Wood with a hard-fought unanimous decision victory over Jose Delgado. Hamdi Abdelwahab could be next for Walter Walker. They seem to have some kind of beef, and Dana White said that they actually want to fight each other in Qatar.
I like that.
In exactly a month's time. Abdelwahabi went the distance with Chris Barnett. Walter Walker just fought for like 90 seconds, 84 to be exact. But Abdelwahabi gets the win, improving to 5-1. Mitch Raposo with a win over Azat Maksim, unanimous decision win. And the returning Mizuki Inoue gets the unanimous decision win over Jacqueline Amorim.
Big underdog. Great win.
Yeah. So there you have it, gents. As of right this moment, we are headed to the second round at the O2. Joseph Parker and Fabio Wardley. Parker seemed to have rocked Wardley in the first round in an exchange. Big fight for Parker as he tries to get that Alexander Usyk undisputed title fight. I do believe the second round is about to start. Yes, it is about to start. Is this the second round? Yes, 2 of 12 right here. And that, of course, sets the table very nicely, Chuck, right? Doesn't that set the table very nicely?
It sets it very nicely.
Chuck has no idea what I'm talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I was gonna bring it. Yeah,
news. Wait, what is this?
This says, start spreading news, bitches. Start spreading the news, bitches.
Boy, this is a big time
John
for
Schneider
you.
And my friends at Breaking Tea. Yeah, up one nothing.
All about
Jack.
It.
The B word, really?
Your love
B word,
of the Blue Jays?
Really? We doing this now?
There's nothing sacred anymore.
His love of the Blue Jays matches my hatred of the Dodgers. So this is perfect, man. This is perfect. Let's just keep it rolling.
Lord knows I hate baseball.
Yeah, you hate baseball.
Come on.
Yeah.
PT, I would support for you. I'm trying to get it.
I watched the Knicks yesterday.
You guys see it? Who can see it?
How do you have like the craziest wardrobe? People always sending him shit, man. He's always
they just want me to wear shit.
The Buffalo Bills just sent me another box of stuff. You know, what do I do?
I like to tell my kids sometimes, I'm like, every single thing that I'm wearing right now, I did not pay for. Guys, I just want to let you know, every single thing, head to toe, I did not pay for.
It's the brightest Roots of Fight t-shirt, just put away.
Of course.
And they point at their clothes and say, same here, Dad.
What's that, Frank? What's that?
And then they point at their clothes and say, same here, Dad.
Same here,
Dad. Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point. No, listen, guys, only up 1-0, 9 runs in the 6th. First pinch hit grand slam in World Series history. Humble and hungry. Yeah. Humble and hungry.
And your Knicks beat the Celtics last night. And man, you're on cloud 9. It's floating around.
My wife is away. My wife is out of town. And it was me and my kids. It was a Friday night. We had the Knicks on the iPad, World Series on the TV. We had just had a nice Shabbos meal. And I said to them, guys, I don't think the vibes have ever been more immaculate in my entire life than right here, right now. If there was a Bills game happening to the right, then it would have been like peak. It would have been like my sports equinox. But it was pretty damn close. I'm not going to lie. The Deitch era. Did something happen? Shit. Oh, no. Is Worthy beating him up?
Worthy is putting hands on this man here.
Oh, no. Should we do a little watch party here? Wait. Is that a knockdown? Andy Lee up on the mat. What's going on?
This is going. Oh, because well, it's gum shield.
Oh my God! Here I am going on and on about the Blue Jays and Parker's on the ropes.
Mate, this fight is crazy. First round is all Parker, and now Wardley's like a beast towards the end of the second.
Give us some play by play here right now, PT. Go for it.
Wardley's still on him, man. We got 22 seconds left in this round. Parker's still biting back. He's not out of this fight whatsoever. But Wardley is very composed. He's standing in the pocket. Parker's coming at him though. Big haymaker's thrown. No, they're just on the ropes. It's going to end. This round is going to end. We're going to the third round, ladies and gentlemen. And
Parker smiling.
Fight. Yes.
Are you saying that Parker was on the ropes, the figurative and literal ropes?
That's what I'm saying, but doesn't seem to be now. Peppering him with jabs here. This is crazy.
Oh, my gosh.
Sounds like one heavyweight fight is living up to billing.
Yeah, I mean, listen. By the way, Chuck, not for nothing, that fight was great, right? That fight was great. The UFC heavyweight.
But you can understand people like not feeling like they got their money's worth. Sure, come on, surely we can be
Okay, what would you rather? A fight that lasted 60 seconds, but it was a knockout, or a 4-minute sort of cliffhanger, and now you're like, you know what? I got 4 good minutes rather than 60. I mean, if you look at it that way,
I have no closure whatsoever. You know,
I don't think anybody.
We actually got more. We got double the amount of Tom Aspinall time that we usually get. You know.
You know what, guys? You should be thanking Tom Aspinall.
If we thought that way, we'd be like rooting for 25-minute fights. We'd be like, come on, man, let's go the full distance. I want to just maximize my time with this guy.
Co-main event.
Full distance MMA, baby. Yeah, it's our promotion.
It was tremendous. And the best part about all of this is that it leads right into a fantastic stretch for the UFC. Two massive, massive shows at the Apex next weekend and the weekend before. Awesome. So the vibes couldn't be higher right
next
now.
Week? Post show next week again?
Hell yeah. What
is it, Onama? Onama and
Steve Garcia. Garcia?
Oh, yeah. How could I forget? Garcia? Yeah.
That'd be big, man.
Huge. I'm looking real quickly if there's anything else to report to you all. No, I don't think so. I'm just looking at all the tweets. Here's a courtesy of Jedi. Trump watched the fights tonight on the runway in Qatar. So they were locked in on Air Force One. And anything else?
So close. He should have just made a stop over, you know?
Yeah. Imagine he pulled up.
Get back in there, Tommy.
Here's a question. Reporter, what I'm trying to figure out is, are there different levels of eye pokes? You see what I'm saying? Dana White says, nobody sees what you're saying, sir. Okay.
We've been poked in the eyes. Nobody can see anything.
Oh, my dear. High drama all over the place. From Abu Dhabi to London to everywhere in between. But my friends, it is time for Chuck's final thoughts. It has been so long that we've done this, Chuck, that I almost forgot. But history would not allow me to forget. Any final thoughts?
You should teach young Pizzi over here, man, about his final things when he's got to do it. But I just wanted to say, I haven't had a chance to talk to you, but I was very impressed, and I really loved the short film that Uncrowned put out, the BKFC. Oh, wow, yeah. I didn't get a chance to congratulate you yet, and so I'm saying congratulations, and I really hope that we're going to do a lot more of those, because I feel like that's been missing in our space for a long time.
I appreciate that. Wow, I wasn't expecting a complimentary final thought. Wow. kind of taking my breath away.
Well, I had to say it, you know? Like, I thought,
oh, wow,
it was,
even
I
a picture here. Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, the response has been great. Yeah. Thank you so much. Yes, the response has been great, and a lot of nice. I mean, the rare, almost unanimous positive review on YouTube. Really incredible.
Beautiful.
So yes, thank you very much. Please do check it out. It's called "What Is BKFC?" An uncrowned film. It's up on our YouTube channel right now, and we are going to do more. In fact, we have two more in the oven already. So stay tuned for all of that. And I will leave you guys. Thank you for that, Chuck. I appreciate it. Commiserations on the Nuggets losing a couple of days ago to the Warriors, but these things happen.
Put it
right?
behind us already, Ariel. We're on to the
next. Yeah. Guys, I leave you with this final thought. Speaking of heavyweights being thrown into the fire, speaking of when the going gets tough, do you guys think, and I kind of know this is more of a rhetorical question, but I'll ask it anyway. Do you guys think that if we would have replaced Tom Aspinall and the same circumstances, same type of fight, bloody nose, eye pokes and all, do you think if we would have replaced Tom Aspinall with Derek Moneyberg, if Moneyberg would have been able to overcome the obstacles? What do you guys think?
First round submission win, obviously.
That's what I thought.
He can last a minute with Gordon Ryan, mate. Like, I mean, come on. You
know? When I heard Mackenzie Dern talk about IBJJF, ADCC, and I was like, but have you gotten your black belt in 3.5 years? Or 3.7?
Took her way longer.
That's pretty good. It's warp speed.
There's an absolute slugfest happening, guys, at the O2, and so that means we have to say goodbye. A bit of a crappy thing for the post-show, but we're not going to sit here for another 9 rounds and do the play-by-play. We leave that type of commentary for GC and Rick. We're not equipped. We're not that talented to sit with you and do commentary as a live fight is going on. It would be very boring, because I think Pete, C, Chuck, and I would just be like, ooh, oh, But high drama right now at the O2. Unfortunately, disappointing drama at Etihad Arena in Abu Dhabi. Tom Aspinall, if you're a Tom Aspinall fan, the good news is he is still the reigning defending UFC heavyweight champion. The bad news is his heart has been questioned, and the bad news is he was poked in both eyes, and the fight ended in a no contest. Congratulations to Mackenzie Dern and all the big winners. We will be with you live on Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern. As always, please give us a thumbs up. Give us a sub. Subs are climbing. Give us a sub and a follow wherever you get your podcast as well. This will be up on our podcast platforms in short order. Frank, can you hurry up and get it up ASAP, please?
Yeah, we gotta wrap this.
Okay. Anyway,
get it up, Frank.
For PT, for Chuck, I'm Ariel. For the whole crew back in New York City, Uncrowned HQ, thank you so much for checking out our coverage all day long. We love you all. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.